And with the Electoral College meetings over and President-elect Biden with 306 official electoral votes, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell congratulated and spoke with his former Senate colleague today. That set the politicos of Washington talking about whether this was a break with President Trump. In other news, a COVID-19 relief bill is getting closer to passing. The $740 billion defense bill is still awaiting the president's signature or veto, and the Congress continues to work on a fiscal year 2021 federal budget. And President-elect Biden will nominate his erstwhile presidential opponent, Pete Buttigieg, to be transportation secretary. Good evening, and thanks for joining us on Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. I'm Peter Slen. We'll begin tonight with the political news of Mitch McConnell congratulating Joe Biden on his election to the presidency. Here he is on the Senate floor.
6 weeks ago, Americans voted in this year's general election. The legal and constitutional processes have continued to play out since then. Yesterday, electors met in all 50 states. So as of this morning, our country has officially a president-elect and a vice-president-elect. Many millions of us had hoped the presidential election would yield a different result. But our system of government has processes to determine who will be sworn in on January the 20th. The Electoral College has spoken. So today I want to congratulate President-elect Joe Biden. The President-elect is no stranger to the Senate. He's devoted himself to public service for many years. I also want to congratulate the Vice President-elect, our colleague from California, Senator Harris. Beyond our differences, all Americans can take pride that our nation has a female Vice President-elect for the very first time. I look forward to finishing out the next 36 days strong with President Trump. Our nation needs us to add another bipartisan chapter to this record of achievement.
That was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today on the Senate floor. President-elect Biden and Majority Leader McConnell served together in the Senate for years and negotiated several deals when Mr. Biden was vice president and Senator McConnell was a GOP leader during Barack Obama's presidency. Now, according to the Hill publication, quote, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is urging Republicans not to object during Congress's count and certification of the Electoral College vote next month. No Senate Republicans have indicated that they are currently planning to object, but Representative Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama, has said he will object as part of next month's Electoral College count. The Hill goes on to write that to successfully force a debate, Representative Brooks will need support from at least one GOP senator. That's only happened twice since 1887, according to the Congressional Research Service. That's reporting from the Hill publication. And here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer reacting to the Majority Leader's remarks about President-elect Biden.
Now, as the Republican leader rightly acknowledged a few moments ago, Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States, and our colleague Kamala Harris will be the next vice president of the United States. Leader McConnell's Republican senators ought to follow suit. They ought to acknowledge that Joe Biden will be the next president, and Kamala Harris will be the next vice president. And for the sake of the country, President Trump should take his cue from Leader McConnell that it's time to end his term with a modicum of grace and dignity, qualities that his predecessors took great pains to display during our grand tradition of a peaceful transfer of power. Enough is enough. Our Republican colleagues, for the sake of our democracy, for the sake of the peaceful transition of power, should stop the shenanigans, stop the misrepresentations, and acknowledge that Joe Biden will be our next president. Enough is enough. And they should follow, Republican senators and Republicans throughout the country should follow Leader McConnell's lead and acknowledge now that Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States.
And according to Politico, quote, Senator McConnell had carefully tiptoed around Biden's electoral win as Trump fought the election in the courts. But the president has been handed a series of losses, punctuated by the Electoral College clinching Biden's win. That prompted a flood of Republicans to recognize him, including the top Republican in Congress, end quote. Here's the president-elect earlier today before boarding his plane to Georgia.
I had a good conversation with Mitch McConnell today. I called him to thank him for the congratulations. Told him, although we disagree on a lot of things, there's things we can work together on. We've always been straight with one another, and we agreed we'd get together sooner than later. And I'm looking forward to working with him. I just want you to know I spoke with him. I've been calling other members. I spoke with some other members as well. There's about a dozen calling. And as I pick them off, I'll tell you who I've spoken to. Okay? Thank you.
And that was President-elect Joe Biden earlier today on his way to Georgia to campaign for John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock for Senate. Now, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany was asked today by reporters whether President Trump now considers Joe Biden to be the president-elect and whether he plans to invite him to the White House. Here are her remarks.
Kayleigh, now that the Electoral College has voted, does the president acknowledge that Joe Biden is the president-elect? Does he have any plans to invite him here to the White House?
The president is still involved in ongoing litigation related to the election. Yesterday's vote was one step in the constitutional process, so I will leave that to him and refer you to the campaign for more on that litigation.
What is his reaction to Leader McConnell today congratulating Joe Biden and calling him the president-elect?
I haven't gotten the president's reaction to that yet, but the president, again, is pursuing ongoing litigation, would refer you to the campaign for further.
And what's the path forward, though, for litigation? If the votes have been certified, if the Electoral College has voted, there doesn't seem to be a legal recourse at this point.
The campaign would have more specifics for you on legal recourse, but yesterday was one step in the constitutional process leading up to the January 20th date in the Constitution.
And that was White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany earlier today. And now we turn our attention to the coronavirus. Well, with the coronavirus lockdown still in place, Matt Visor of the Washington Post, what is Wednesday, January 20th at noon going to look like in Washington?
It's going to be unusual. There will be a lot of things that will be done that will sort of reimagine the inauguration as we've seen it in years past. There will be much fewer people on the platform as President-elect Joe Biden takes the oath of office. And probably fewer people on the National Mall. His transition and his inauguration committee are urging people not to come, not to travel to Washington because of health protocols around the coronavirus. So it will be quite unusual. There will be some things that will be familiar to people. There still will be a swearing-in ceremony out in front of the Capitol. There will still be an inauguration address delivered by Joe Biden. And they're planning up sort of a parade of sorts that will probably be much more virtual in nature than in person.
Mr. Visor, do you know, are hotels getting reservations with out-of-town visitors, or is there an inaugural platform being built at the White House at this point?
So there are platforms being built, and the way that the inauguration committee has approached this is that it will be easier to scale down than scale up. So some of these decisions will be made over the coming weeks in terms of how a lot of that will look. And I'm not sure on the latest of hotel bookings, but this is the first time that we've really heard from the Biden inauguration committee on what they want to happen and what they see is happening. And one of the first things that they're saying is to urge people not to be traveling and not to come to be here in person, and they're planning to outline a little bit more of their virtual components where they believe that people can participate at home or within their own communities and have much smaller gatherings than one that would include hundreds of thousands, if not millions, coming to Washington.
And in your most recent Washington Post report, you write that David Kessler, former FDA commissioner, is the inauguration's chief medical advisor. Has this ever happened before? Has there ever been a chief medical advisor?
I don't believe so. And Dr. Kessler is somebody who has been advising Joe Biden for many months around the coronavirus. And so he's starting to give his advice to the inauguration planning. And there are, you know, some things that we're learning and some things that are still up in the air. For example, they're saying that the platform out in front of the Capitol will have far fewer people on it. People will be socially distanced, but we don't know exactly how many people, you know, typically former presidents attend these inauguration addresses. So we don't know, you know, if President George W. Bush, will he be coming from Texas or President Carter from Georgia? You would expect President Obama, given his partnership with Joe Biden and his location in Washington, D.C., to be there. You know, those kind of details, I think, are still being worked out.
Who are some of the people heading up Mr. Biden's inaugural committee?
So he has a couple of different people who are involved with the committee and who are running it. Maju Varghese is the executive director. He has Tony Allen, who is president of Delaware State University, who is the chief executive for the inauguration. And some of the names that they're outlining just now are people who are involved in producing the Democratic National Convention in August, which also was, quite frankly, completely reimagined, you know, to have an event that was mostly virtual. So those names include Stephanie Cutter and Ricky Kirshner, as well as Rod O'Connor, who were involved in producing that event, but have also done Super Bowl halftime shows, Tony Awards ceremonies. So they are now in the process of kind of, you know, reimagining, I think, this event as one that will be, you know, seen on computer screens, you know, seen on television screens and on iPhones rather than seen in person. And so I think that's their challenge, and that's kind of what those people are going to be working on over the next couple of weeks.
And the traditional inaugural balls in the evening, probably a no-go?
It seems like it. There's been some discussion of whether they could scale back, you know, have maybe one ball, you know, have one event that evening, something along those lines. But that's a more challenging, you know, it's indoors, you know, finding a venue for those kinds of things. And, you know, this is the first stamp of the Biden presidency. And I think they're very cautious and conscious of wanting it to be one of health safety and health protocols. So I think that they're very reluctant to be doing things that are seen as risky and sort of any sort of super spreader event as people wait to get vaccinated.
And Matt Visor of The Washington Post, two final questions. How's the fundraising going for the Biden-Harris team? And what will be the role of President Donald Trump, if any?
They are still raising money, and they're actually selling a lot of merchandise on their websites that include everything from pint glasses and champagne glasses to actually masks that you know have Biden and Harris on them, which is probably a first for inauguration to be selling masks. So they still are trying to raise money. It's probably less money, quite frankly, will be needed this time around because they're not having the widespread balls and the things that cost a lot of money. But they are still talking about having a concert, you know, that would be potentially on the National Mall, but broadcast virtually to people at home. So there still will be costs associated with the inauguration, but probably not quite as much as typically seen. In terms of President Trump, it's still very much up in the air. Trump himself has not said whether he would be willing to participate in the inauguration. And the Biden team is kind of planning different scenarios, whether he does participate or doesn't participate. The one thing that viewers may remember is that tea that typically takes place in the morning before a new president is sworn into office. And the two presidents, one outgoing, one incoming, ride together in a car, in a limousine, down to the Capitol. So that is something that may not happen this time around, both for health protocols as well as because President Trump may end up deciding not to participate in the ritual.
And there's an update on Wednesday, January 20th, which is Inauguration Day. Matt Visor with The Washington Post, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And you're listening to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. On the House floor, Speaker Nancy Pelosi amended her earlier rules about wearing face coverings while speaking on the floor. Here's what she had to say.
The chair will take this occasion to update her announcement of July 29th and November 18th, concerning the wearing of masks in the hall of the House during the coronavirus pandemic. The chair wishes to again emphasize the importance of safe practices during House proceedings. Accordingly, masks will now be required at all times in the hall of the House without exception, including while members are under recognition. The chair would reiterate that this is a matter of order and decorum in the chamber under Clause 2 of Rule 1. To be clear, members will not be recognized unless they are wearing a mask, and recognition will be withdrawn if they remove the mask while speaking. The chair appreciates the continued attention of all members and staff to these principles. Pursuant to Section 4B of the House Resolution 96, the House stands adjourned until noon tomorrow for morning hour debate and 2 p.m. for legislative business.
And last week, House Republican Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, sent a letter asking the Speaker to, quote, rein in the face mask designs Democrats have been wearing on the House floor, end quote. You can read his entire letter at Politico.com. Negotiations continue on a COVID stimulus package. Here's the Senate Majority Leader earlier today at a press conference on Capitol Hill.
Our job here is to guarantee that there's enough money to facilitate the delivery, as well as to do other things that we can agree on. And as I've said repeatedly, number one, we're not leaving here without a COVID package. It's not going to happen. We're going to stay here until we get a COVID package, no matter how long it takes. We'll be here until we get a COVID package. Number two, the way forward, obviously, is to put aside the two things that are the most contentious on each side, liability protection and state and local. We all know the new administration is going to be asking for another package. We can live to fight another day on what we disagree on, but we ought to agree to go forward on what we can agree on. That is the way forward. No less a figure than the number two Democrat in the House of Representatives, the Majority Leader, said on Sunday in one of the talk shows that it made sense to set aside the two things that were the most contentious and agree on all the rest. So it is still my hope we're going to get an omnibus appropriation, and it will have attached to it, when it comes over from the House, an agreement that we've been able to reach with the four corners and Secretary Mnuchin and the President.
And that was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today on Capitol Hill. Now, according to The Intercept publication, quote, a draft of coronavirus relief legislation circulated by a bipartisan group of lawmakers eschews direct payments to average Americans but contains an unusually generous handout to the very wealthy. The draft legislation, called the Bipartisan Emergency COVID Relief Act of 2020, was released this week as part of a package of two major bills to confront the ongoing crisis. The Intercept goes on to report that, quote, the draft of the first bill circulating on Capitol Hill contains a number of adjustments to the Paycheck Protection Program, the forgivable loan program that has served as a centerpiece of the government's efforts to curb job losses stemming from the pandemic. Many of the changes provide extended eligibility for expenses that can be reimbursed by the PPP program, including damage from looting and costs associated with cloud computing, as well as the construction of sneeze guards and other safety measures implemented by businesses, end quote. Now, you can read the entire article at TheIntercept.com. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer also spoke with reporters about the latest on aid packages.
Leader Schumer, is the $6 billion in the bipartisan proposal for vaccine distribution enough? And are you willing to set aside state and local to get the rest passed?
Let me, on the first one, you know, I think without talking about what will happen in that room, I think we need more for distribution. On state and local, everyone knows my position. It has broad bipartisan support, and I'm not going to get into negotiations in any way. That'll occur at 4 o'clock. Yes.
Senator McConnell last week suggested setting aside liability protections and setting aside state and local. And yet last week you criticized that. I mean, isn't that where these talks are going?
As I
right
said,
now?
I am not going to get into negotiations here. That'll occur at 4 o'clock. Yes.
One of your caucus members, Senator Sanders, is still pushing for the individual $1,200 stimulus checks. Is there any chance we could see that this month, or is that something down the road?
I'm not going to get into negotiations in the room, but $1,200 in additional money to go to people is something many in our caucus, including me, support.
And that was Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer earlier today on Capitol Hill. You're listening to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. And welcome back. This is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio. I'm Peter Slynn with some more headlines. According to CNN, congressional lawmakers are preparing a $1.4 trillion spending bill to fund federal agencies through the end of September 2021. But there's still a question of what, if any, coronavirus relief measures will be attached to it, including a Democratic proposal for $160 billion in state and local aid. Congress may also decide to pass another short-term stopgap funding bill, like it did last week, to keep government agencies afloat while relief negotiations continue. That's reporting by CNN. And Michigan Republican Congressman Paul Mitchell sent a letter to both Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel and House Republican Leader Kevin McCarthy, notifying them of his switch of party affiliation from Republican to Independent. He wrote in part, quote, "I believe that raw political considerations, not constitutional or voting integrity concerns, motivate many in party leadership to support the Stop the Steal efforts, which is extremely disappointing to me. As elected members of Congress, we take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, not to preserve and protect the political interests of any individual, be it the president or anyone else, to the detriment of our cherished nation." As a result, Representative Mitchell writes, "I am writing to advise you both that I am withdrawing from my engagement and association with the Republican Party at both the national and state levels. I will support, contribute to, and fundraise for individual candidates who reflect the principles I hold dear." Now, you can find the entire letter at Representative Paul Mitchell's website. And according to the Associated Press, quote, "President-elect Joe Biden is expected to pick former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg to head the Transportation Department, according to three people familiar with the plans. Buttigieg, one of Biden's rivals for the Democratic presidential nomination, was a breakout star of the primaries, sharing victory in the nation's first caucus with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. He suspended his campaign before Super Tuesday and endorsed Joe Biden. You can find that entire article at apnews.com. And this morning on ABC's Good Morning America, Dr. Anthony Fauci advised that both President Donald Trump and President-elect Joe Biden get the COVID-19 vaccine. Here's that exchange.
This is a person who very soon will be the president of the United States. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris will very soon be the vice president of the United States. For security reasons, I really feel strongly that we should get them vaccinated as soon as we possibly can. You want him fully protected as he enters into the presidency in January. So that would be my strong recommendation.
What about President Trump? He's already had the virus. Should he take the vaccine?
You know, if he were asking me, I would recommend that he do that as well as Vice President Pence. You still want to protect people who are, you know, very important to our country right now, even though the president himself was infected and he has likely antibodies that likely would be protective. We're not sure how long that protection lasts. So to be doubly sure, I would recommend that he get vaccinated as well as the vice president.
And that was Dr. Anthony Fauci earlier today on Good Morning America. And while the president-elect was leaving for Georgia earlier today, he was asked about Dr. Fauci's recommendations.
You know when you're getting a vaccine?
Come on, guys, let's hug.
Dr. Fauci recommends I get the vaccine sooner than later. I want to just make sure we do it by the numbers, and we do it. But when I do it, you'll have notice, and we'll do it publicly. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Let's go to the plane.
And that was President-elect Joe Biden earlier today. Now back at the White House, Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, who has also recovered from COVID-19, took questions from reporters on whether or not President Trump would take the new vaccine and if she would as well.
Steve. Does the president plan to take the vaccine, and will he do it in a public way to inspire confidence among people?
So the president currently at this moment has said he is absolutely open to taking the vaccine. He's been emphatic about that to me privately and to you all publicly. But he did recently recover from COVID. He has the continued protective effects of the monoclonal antibody cocktail that I mentioned. And he will receive the vaccine as soon as his medical team determines it's best. But his priority is frontline workers, those in long-term care facilities, and he wants to make sure that the vulnerable get access first. Yes.
Wouldn't him taking the vaccine set an example for Americans to give them confidence? Dr. Fauci, as well as Matthias Salui, both said today that they think President Trump should get the vaccine, if A, you know, because for himself, but B, to set an example. Will he do that? Like, why not do it just to show Americans that it's safe?
Because he also wants to show Americans that our priority are the most vulnerable. There will be some senior administration officials taking it publicly to instill that confidence. It is very important. And the president, no, but you'll learn in the next few days who that is, who those individuals will be. But they will be taking it publicly to instill confidence. The president wants to send a parallel message, which is, you know, our long-term care facility residents and our frontline workers are paramount and importance, and he wants to set an example in that regard. I absolutely would be open to taking the vaccine. As has been reported, and as I shared with some of you yesterday, the White House, it will be a very limited group of people who have access to it initially. The president's tweet indicated that the White House should receive it at a later date to, again, prioritize the most vulnerable. But some career staff, national security staff, for the purposes of continuity of government, will have access, in addition to a very small group of senior administration officials for the purpose of instilling public confidence.
And that was White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany earlier today. Now, out in California, Governor Gavin Newsom reported more than 32,000 new cases in the state over the past 24 hours. He also noted that California had seen 142 deaths. Governor Newsom said that 163 people had been lost to the virus on average over the past 7 days. The all-time high numbers of deaths related to the virus was 225. Here's the California governor earlier today.
Hi, Governor. A quick follow-up on hospital staffing challenges and specifically California's request. Has there been any discussion about requesting a return of the USNS Mercy hospital ship and its 1,000-some beds since Southern California is so hard hit? And also, what requests, if any, has California made from neighboring states that may not be, right now anyway, as hard hit and have some extra staff to spare? And finally, are you at all worried that the staffing crisis might hamper the state's ability to quickly and safely distribute and really implement the vaccine over the coming months?
Let me take the latter part of your question first. At this moment, no. We are prioritizing those that are distributing and administering the vaccine, as well as those that are the most essential healthcare workers in the first tranche, the first distribution of the two-dose vaccine. The good news is we're seeing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of additional vaccines now in the queue, and we expect a few million, as I said, by the end of the month. By the way, that will start having an impact. Just the first dose, Pfizer, 21 days till the second dose, Moderna, 28 days till the second dose. But even after the first dose, 10 to 12 days later, we'll start to see some benefits beginning to accrue. There's some real sophistication as it relates to the distribution of the vaccine within cohorts. meaning it's not just an ICU nurse or doctor. It's an ICU nurse, a doctor, and environmental service worker. That's also part of the prioritization. So we can create these pockets of support, also pockets of sanctity, so to speak, in terms of a mindset and relief for the entire team that is critically attending to the needs of those most at risk. Regarding the, and I'll ask Dr. Galley to talk a little bit more about it, the staffing from other states, you know, most other states are in a similar predicament. We are actually looking overseas, interestingly, to potentially recruit some staffing. We've done this in the past for many different issues in terms of our mutual aid, well established, most recently, of course, with our wildfires, but we're looking at health staff in addition. We also have, answer your question, and again, Dr. Galley will close this out, I've had, in fact, the last 48 hours, I've had multiple conversations about the USNS Mercy. Interestingly, one of the most significant resources in the USNS is not the beds as defined, but the extraordinary talent on board, meaning the human capital, the human resources, these remarkable military men and women, these personnel. And so we have had that conversation. It's not been formalized with our federal partners. We've had it internally in terms of potential need. But that's just to give you an update, full disclosure, on some of those more recent conversations in that space. But no, again, formal request has gone into the administration. The request currently is for these 10 teams of 20, these Department of Defense medical personnel. And that request is outstanding. We've received, and we're very grateful, those paramedics and EMTs through FEMA and the DMAT teams, those 35 that are down there in Pioneer and El Centro Hospitals down near Imperial County near the border. So that's been encouraging. Again, the partnerships continue to be very, very positive.
And Governor Newsom also announced that California had activated so-called mutual aid among the state's coroners. That means if one area's coroner is overwhelmed, they can call on those from nearby regions for help. Now, you can listen to or watch Governor Newsom's entire briefing on our website at cspan.org. And in Maryland, Republican Governor Larry Hogan updated residents about vaccine distribution.
After all that we've been through in 2020, yesterday truly was a day of hope. While we still have several months of difficult struggles ahead of us, this is a turning point and a light at the end of a very long tunnel and the beginning of the end of this deadly pandemic. As we laid out in our statewide vaccination plan, our earliest vaccinations will be focused on our frontline healthcare workers, the residents and staff of our nursing homes, and other long-term care facilities, as well as first responders and our most vulnerable populations. Over the course of the next week, as part of the initial allocation of 155,000 doses, every single hospital and every region of our state will begin to receive their first COVID-19 vaccines. As more vaccines begin to arrive from the federal government, our distribution plans will continue accelerating as we strive to reach more and more of our citizens. I want to ask Marylanders for their patience as we work hard to get the entire state eventually vaccinated. To assist in the efficient distribution of COVID-19 vaccines, today I am reactivating the Maryland National Guard in order to provide necessary logistical support to state health officials. During this initial distribution phase, the Guard will be providing logistical support. Special field teams will be deployed to assist state health officials with vaccination planning and operations, as well as providing logistical support to points of distribution across the state. As more vaccines become available to us, the Guard will then be ramping up to provide additional coordination and logistical support and to help us with the setup of mobile vaccination clinics. The Guard will also augment our rapid response teams to address outbreaks at nursing homes and other long-term care facilities.
And that was Maryland Governor Larry Hogan earlier today. The governor's news conference comes a day after the University of Maryland Medical System and Johns Hopkins Medicine received Maryland's first batches of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. Well, that's all for Washington Today. If you've missed any of this program, you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the rest of your evening.